The following is a special presentation of the Not Quite Right podcast, in which we discuss, in detail, entries to our erotic flash fiction competition, the Not Quite Right Prize for Flesh Fiction. This episode contains adult themes and is not appropriate for listeners under the age of 18. And Mum, if you're still listening, that's on you.
Something doesn't seem quite right.
Welcome to Not Quite Right. My name's Ed.
And I'm Amanda.
We're back, bitches.
Oh, baby.
So this is the second installment
You've
of our
like
series.
You've had like 4 sips of wine.
I've actually had 1 sip of wine.
One. And, oh, my God.
That's all it takes.
Oh, dear.
But I'm having the sip of wine now because I'm going to have to read a sexy story a bit later in this episode.
You need a little Dutch courage.
I'll be popping my cherry, my sexy story cherry on this episode.
That's hot.
So this is the second of a series of six. We're doing one episode per category.
Mm-hmm.
The category for today is erotic romance.
Ooh la la.
And we'll be sharing the podium, that is the third and the second place getters for the category. And we'll be saving the winner, of course, until the final episode. But we'll also be talking about our thoughts for this category and reading out the second place getter. But before we get to all that, we are going to have a little chat with our guest judge for this category. And our guest judge is Julia Boggio. And Julia is a romance writer and another close friend of yours.
Yes.
Tell us about Julia.
Yeah, another member of the coven. And in fact, we've spoken to Julia before. We appeared on her podcast, which she's taken a little sabbatical from so that she could focus on her writing. She's recently signed on with a publisher as well. She's been successfully self-published for some time in romance now, and she's an absolute gun at marketing. She's an ex-photographer. And quite a few of her books focus on photography as like the sort of the setting or the premise for their romantic storylines. And they're really good fun. Her marketing is very impressive. So if you're interested in marketing your own novels, she's someone to look at, I think, and emulate. But she's also just really good fun. She's got a great eye for romance and the perfect fit to help us judge this category. And I really appreciate her help because, of course, like all our guest judges, she was doing it for free out of the kindness of her heart. She's a very, very incredibly busy woman, but she made time to help us out. And we had a lovely chat with Julia and talked about the category and her thoughts and feelings about the stories that we received.
Yeah, so let's get to that discussion now. So thanks for joining us, Julia. And Julia, you've helped us judge the romance category, which is a perfect fit because you are a romance writer. So tell us a little bit about your experience.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I mean, there was quite a range of work in there. What I was looking for personally was a piece with a defined beginning, middle, and end. So I wanted to feel like even though it was only 1,500 words, that there was a full story in there. And the other thing that I was really looking for was an emotional build. In my experience being a romance writer, the thing that I believe is that you can't have good sex without the emotion. You don't feel it as a reader unless you're being brought on an emotional journey, because if you don't have that, then the words just fall flat on the page. So I think those were the two major things that I was looking for in the many, many pieces that I read.
You did read quite a lot.
Did you find that you learned anything from reading? Because this is a little bit outside your normal reading, I guess. We're talking about erotic romance, not classic romance. Was there anything, I guess, fundamentally different that you like learned along the way? Or do you feel like it's an extension of the romance genre in terms of the content? Like the romance comes first and the spiciness factor is just like an extension of that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very, very thin line between the two. And if you read a lot of modern romance, it very much tips into the erotic these days. It's not like, you know, 20 years ago where sex scenes weren't necessarily spelled out for the reader. So there's definitely a connection between the two. I think for me, like I said, it's always the emotion that sells the scene. You know, I'm the editor of the Romantic Novelists Association's reader magazine, and we sent out a questionnaire to readers asking them about spice levels in romance and what they like. And without a doubt, the answer came back that spice without reason, without the emotion, is just not fun to read.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to me. And I think the romance category was probably one where we saw more of an attempt to develop relationships. But what I will say about some stories that maybe fell a little bit more flat was that they're just looking at like, okay, here's a man and here's a woman kind of thing. Like, we weren't getting that character development. We weren't getting an understanding of why these two people together as opposed to any other person. And so I think that was something that for me was a little bit of a stumbling block for some stories of just like, well, okay, there's a sex scene here, but like, who are these people and why do they care about each
other? If you don't care about the characters, then there's no scene. It's just words.
And, you know, you talked about sort of spice levels and so on. And I know in the romance world, and that's very much the world that you write in, now people like kind of gravitate towards these rating systems, you know, like chilies or what have you, the spice ratings that go on particular books. And we might have on a lower end, well, there might be no sex whatsoever, but there might also be that fade to black kind of thing or closed door scenes versus all the way up the other end of the spectrum where it starts to become much more explicit. Did you see any of that filtering into what we were seeing in this comp, like these kinds of levels?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, there were some that were more demure, as you were saying, in your system. And I would say that is your sweet romance, where you're not really showing anything on the page. It is much more about the emotion. And I mean, sometimes in some of the stories, the erotic element was the relationship. It wasn't sex. It was the emotion and the character's growth on the page. The thing that I liked is that erotica isn't always necessarily explicit sex. There's more to it than that.
I mean, me and Ed have talked about our experiences writing for this comp because we submitted our own stories to the comp. And what about you? Like, what, you know, level of spice are you comfortable getting into when you're writing your novels?
My first book was Closed Door, which would probably be about a 2 on the spice scale, because I just kept thinking, oh my God, my dad's going to read this.
And then funnily enough, did he read it?
He did. He read it. And then his feedback was, oh, you should have put more sex in. I was like, oh, okay, Dad. Well, buckle up.
Once you sort of go past that comfort zone, you realize it's probably not that bad.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Thought. Yeah. It's funny because I was at a Christmas party with a bunch of authors in December and none of them were romance novelists. I was the only one. And they were talking about how cringeworthy they find it writing sex scenes. And I just was thinking to myself, if you're going to enter into writing a sex scene with it in your head that it's cringeworthy, then of course you're going to struggle with it.
Do you think there's a correlation between finding writing erotic scenes cringy and maybe not being that great in the bedroom? Or
it's all about imagination, Amanda. My husband always, when he reads my books, he's like, oh, what's this sex? I'm like, well, you know.
Let me show you. Actually, we had some comments from people in the competition who, in their feedback in the submission form, were sort of saying, oh, my husband thanks you, or my wife thanks you for this opportunity. So I guess people exploring outside off the page as well.
Exactly. Write what you know, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Do a bit of research. Yeah.
So, Julia, tell us about some of your standouts for this round. What were some of your favorite responses to themes?
There were quite a few themes that I think were recurring. And one that I enjoyed a lot was when people, you know, especially women, were talking about getting comfortable in the body that they have. There were a few stories like that where I felt really moved by the character's journey. One that I thought was quite sexy was called The Real Kaya. And it was about a woman who was living a different life in a sort of virtual reality version of herself. And then, you know, she goes back into real life and somebody shows attraction towards her and she finds it surprising. And she's kind of like, oh my God, he actually likes the body that I have. And I thought that was a really nice, it was a really nice journey for the character to go on. And I found that to be well written, very and erotic as well.
And The Real Kaya was by Farrah Bird.
And another one, similar sort of theme, was one called Fucked.
And so the story Fucked is by Jane Slight. Great title.
Yeah, I like it. Very succinct. And that one was about, you know, aging bodies and infidelity. And again, accepting who you are and learning to feel sexy in the body that you're in. So I found there were a few stories along those lines that I thought were quite effective. I also enjoyed stories where things that weren't traditionally found sexy. Well, and that was your prompt, wasn't it? You know, make them unsexy sexy. And there was one, putting the dirty in dirty laundry, that I just thought was really, I thought the author should write an entire book in that voice. I just really loved it. I identified with it. And at the end of the story, she gets turned on because her husband is doing the laundry, and he always does the laundry, but it's on a day where she particularly needs him to be doing the laundry. Mm. I just really enjoyed her voice and the entire story there.
A message for husbands everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And there's another one called Bathrooms Then and Now, which I absolutely loved. It was one of my favorites. And I think maybe it's because I've been married for 21 years. I enjoyed the story because it was talking about a scene after they'd had sex and they were in the bathroom together and they were just doing their like after sex ablutions and just joking around at each other and farting and all kinds of things. It was just, I just found it really charming. Mm. I found it very charming. And so I really, I enjoyed the prompt that you gave people. I thought that it sparked a lot of creativity.
It certainly did. I'm interested in your thoughts though, because we did have quite a lot of stories that were dealing with this idea of a negative self-perception that I am unsexy and that, you know, my journey in this story is going to be that I'm going to realize I'm really sexy or what have you. Mm. But I found there were a lot of female characters who were relying on male approval to feel sexy and that they in themselves were sort of waiting for someone else to validate them before they would feel sexy. So I'm just interested in your thoughts on that, whether that was something that came up for you or...
I guess I don't mind that. No.
Which is totally valid. I mean, I guess it just came up time and again for me that someone's personal journey was reliant on someone else's perception. But I mean, that's valid too. Like, if you're going to be sexy, you kind of want someone to find you appealing, right?
Exactly. It's true to life. I mean, otherwise you would have just had a whole bunch of stories about masturbation, you know? Really.
Which is not a bad thing.
I wanted to say
something on that too, on what you just raised, Amanda, because I did find that some stories did have that theme, but I want to come at it from a male perspective as well.
Oh, okay, great.
Because already on the attacking, I guess.
No, can't wait.
Just the male characters, and I'm not saying all the stories that have this theme had this issue, but some of the stories that were about that validation, for me as a man reading it, I found them deeply unerotic.
Okay.
Because the man, like, his entire function was to validate the woman, and the woman wasn't actually into the man. She was into the validation, and I found that very off-putting.
Okay.
Because he wasn't really there, if you get what I'm saying. It was all in her head.
Two-dimensional.
So anyway, this is my reflection as a man on some of those stories, but I understand that maybe your perspective is different.
Well, I mean, for example, going back to the story Fucked, I liked that, you know, it was an older woman. Her husband was cheating on her. She had this plumber that she kept finding things around the house to have him back around, and they kind of were developing a friendship over time and whatnot. And one thing I liked is that when they did finally get together, you know, at the end, she realized that he also didn't feel perfect, you know, and I thought that that was a nice moment where she was like, you know, this is how she felt about herself. But then she looked at him and was like, well, he's feeling the same way about himself, you know, and we're just discovering this together. And I mean, I don't know if that's kind of one of the stories that you would pick out as having the man validating her, but I also felt like there was an acknowledgement of the male response to growing old, which I thought was nice.
So you write romance. And so give us a little bit of background to the kinds of stories that you write and the world that you're working with in your storytelling.
At present, I write romance set in the world of professional photography, because I used to be a professional photographer myself. So it's a world that I know extremely well. Mm-hmm. I have 4 books self-published, starting with Shooters. And then now I've actually got 2 books under contract with Bloomsbury Publishing that I'm working on. So very, very exciting. First one's out next October. I like writing strong women with real life problems and strong men, because I think that strong women deserve strong men. So
that's a good point. And I've obviously read a few of your books along the way, Julia. And I think also you write complex characters. So you say real women, strong women, but, you know, sometimes they come with challenges that they've faced in their life. And I think that can be really compelling, especially as it relates to how they approach their romantic relationships. So how do you do your research when you're writing these books?
Oh, gosh. A lot of reading, a lot of online stalking, a lot of talking people. Like, I always try, if I can, to talk to people who have the issues that I'm writing about, because that always is going to give insight. But I also don't over research, because I think that you have to wear research with a light touch. And sometimes you can do loads and loads of research for one line, because you're just trying to give a feeling to make it accurate. I went to Buckingham Palace the other day to do some research. That was good. Wow.
Did they let you in? Did you go in?
Yeah, I knocked. They were like, hey. And I was like, yeah. No, it was a tour. It was a tour of the East Wing. So I got to stand outside. You know that balcony they're always standing on? Yeah. I got to like peer into the balcony. And that was fun research. And I've done all kinds of crazy stuff. You know, I went to a Bollywood dance class once for research, because, you know, sometimes research involves me actually just going to experience things myself.
I know a little bit of your backstory and your early viral fame. So would you like to share your story with us?
Sure, why not? As you've asked so kindly. So when I got married in 2005, and at our wedding, we did the dance from Dirty Dancing. Mm-hmm. We filmed it, but we didn't do anything with it for 2 years, because at the time there wasn't really much to do with it online. And then YouTube came around. You know, a couple years later, we thought, oh, let's put it up so our friends in America could see it, because they couldn't all come to the wedding. And we put it up, and within a day, we had 200 views. Mm. And the Metro had called, which is a kind of a free newspaper over in the UK where I live. And, you know, they did a story on it, and we were all excited about that. And so the next day, my husband got onto the train, and he got a copy of the newspaper, and he got off at the next stop. It's like, oh my God, we've got an entire page in the Metro. And I'm like, James, you're not going to believe this. Richard and Judy have been on the phone. They want us to have us on their show. And it kind of snowballed from there to the point where we ended up actually in Australia. We did Mel and Kashi. Morning TV. And we ended up on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And what happened, Julia, on the Oprah Winfrey Show? I've watched the video, but what happened?
So we were called up on stage to do the dance, and, you know, the audience was clapping along politely because, you know, we're not the best dancers in the world, but we can do that dance. And suddenly they just start going absolutely crazy. And I just look over my husband's shoulder, and Patrick Swayze is walking towards me.
I'm fanning myself.
And he's like, you want to dance? And I pushed my husband out of the way, and I said, yes, take me, I'm yours. And then we danced. It was great.
And your husband at some point forgave you, which is very generous of him. But
well, yeah, of course. But my husband went and is no shrinking wallflower himself. So he waited for me and Patrick to finish, and then he yells across the stage, "Hey, Patrick, let's do the lift!" And he launches himself stage at Patrick Swayze. So he had his moment in the sun as well.
Wow, no, that's really fun. And so we wanted to give one of your books to your top pick for this category. So which story was your top pick?
Well, it's one I've already mentioned, and it's called Bathrooms Then and Now. And it's the story that really stuck with me. I just found it very charming. And I know it's about farts and flossing and going to the toilet after sex, but just the familiarity of their relationship was what I found erotic.
So congratulations, Chase Cartwright, for your story, Bathrooms Then and Now.
So Chase, you'll get your choice of Julia's books. And so that includes the stories from the photographers series, but also the upcoming Bloomsbury books. So if you'd like to have a look at those and see what you would like to choose, but we'll get in touch with you about that separately. But thank you so much, Julia, for sharing your experience judging the Not Quite Right prize for Flesh Fiction. I know as a guest and volunteer judge that it was a big ask of you, and I really appreciate the time that you spent.
Yes, thank you
for asking me. I really did enjoy it.
Well, we can't compete with Patrick Swayze, but we hope you had the time of your life.
Oh my God, you were just waiting to say that.
I've been waiting like 5 minutes for that one.
Well done, Ed.
Dear.
So before we get to the story reading and the podium, let's share our quick thoughts about this category, the erotic romance category.
So we received 110 entries to the erotic romance category, which is roughly about a fifth of the entries that we received, and the second most popular category after erotic comedy.
Yeah, and I would have actually guessed it would be the most popular category. So I think maybe like our audience might skew towards comedy a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, given the build up and perhaps the theme as well might have had that impact. And also maybe some of the romance ones maybe could feature in other categories as well. But yeah, definitely a popular one. And in fact, when we were receiving entries a few times in that process, I was sort of taking stats of where we're at. And a couple of times during that process, erotic romance was the most popular category. So it was definitely up there. And it's only a difference of 20 stories. Mm. Look, I'll say I found this category a little bit more challenging to judge for me personally, which surprised me because I feel like eroticism and romance go hand in hand, that they're quite closely tied together and that it's maybe the most obvious mix of all the categories that we had. But interestingly, there were times when I found it quite difficult. And I think probably my biggest challenge in this category, so if anyone's listening who entered in this category, maybe didn't long list and is wondering why, you know, if it didn't get through, one of the challenges that I had and one of the things that I noticed was that this category, as you might imagine, included a lot of tropes. Mm. Romance tropes are well-loved, incredibly well-known. Like of all the genres, I think romance is probably categorized to the point where people really know their niche of what they enjoy in the romance category if they are big romance fans. But some of these tropes, I think, in a flash fiction setting, in a setting where we're trying to differentiate stories, can come across a little bit as like, well, I've sort of seen this before.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our regular Not Quite Right prize for flash fiction, there's often an element where you need to rise above. You need to have some sort of what we call element of surprise. It's not enough to just write a great story. You have to kind of write a great story that feels fresh and feels special somehow, because everybody's writing great stories, to be frank.
Yeah, I also found it challenging. One of the things I struggled with really in the judging is how much, I guess, to give to the stories that were typical romance stories and met the brief of like, this is a romance story. You have made the unsexy irresistible, but also you've trodden a path that has been well trodden already.
Mm. And so some of those things that maybe came up time and again were some of these cliche phrases. So one that I noted, and which I'll be honest, like had started to irritate me after a little while, was this idea of closing the distance. And in fact, that was a line that featured in our second place story from the erotic comedy category. So, and in fact, I think I called out some stats on it in the long list episode. It was something like one in 10 stories used that line. So very common, and it's not by any means a deal breaker. But when you're using that same exact language as everybody else, it starts to just become a little bit same-same. Mm. So just a little challenge, I suppose. And I think this is where maybe we differed in our judging from Julia as well.
Yeah.
Because I think Julia was coming at this very much from that romance author perspective and loving the tropes, leaning into the tropes, and our perspective is a little bit different. We're coming at it as a piece of flash fiction and what's sort of standout and different and kind of surprising and fresh. So yeah, I guess that's our unique perspective. And I think people would be entitled to disagree with that. I mean, certainly these phrases are popular for a reason. Mm. You know, people think they're hot, right? When they read that in a romance novel, like it moves them. Mm. But at the same time, in a romance novel, you've often had more time to get to know the characters. Yeah, yeah. You've had time to invest in their relationship. There's been a will they, won't they thing going for some chapters where that kind of line just comes with this sort of oomph. And I think it's difficult. I think it's difficult to make people love characters in a very short space of time, but it is possible. One other thing I noticed in this category was this idea of the unsexy thing. So our theme, for those who don't know, our theme for the competition was making the unsexy irresistible. That was the challenge for each writer. And in many of these stories, the unsexy thing was the character, their own self-perception. Yeah. I am middle-aged. I am old. I am a bigger weight than I would like to be, or whatever it might be that makes them feel unsexy in themselves. And then through a process of self-discovery and through a process of validation by this male character in many cases, come to realize that they are in fact sexy after all, which is lovely. And I think that was a theme that, based on Julia's comments, she resonated with, but that was quite prevalent across a lot of stories. So making your story stand out when that was your premise was also a challenge.
I'm not necessarily against that premise, but I did find, I guess, when the unsexy thing was like, I'm old, you know, I think old people can be sexy.
In your comments, you were getting really pissed off. I was reading some of your comments and like, oh, why does the unsexy thing have to be middle age? It's like almost you were taking it personally, I feel.
Yeah, it's hard. Look, it's not just that I'm middle aged and I'm like, stop talking about me like that. But I think.
Triggered.
No, but I think that there's nothing wrong with middle age. And I think that focusing on that as the unsexy thing, as if like obviously that's unsexy, is not good.
But at the same time, a lot of people are on that wavelength.
Yeah.
So clearly a lot of people do find it unsexy or struggle with that self-perception.
I guess there's a difference here. If it's someone who is middle-aged or older who's struggling with the fact that they feel unsexy, that's one thing. But if it's a younger person and the unsexy thing is the older person that they are contemplating having sex with, which
oh,
did come
I
up.
See.
That's a completely different thing.
I see why
thing.
You're getting triggered. You just don't like the idea that a younger person is looking at you and going, ew.
Jeez, why are you being like this?
It's certainly something that I noticed as well.
Mm.
Like for me, it was more satisfying if the relationship felt like two people coming together
yeah.
who
yeah.
were, you know, really meant to be and not just sort of a solo journey
yeah.
of self-discovery
yeah.
kind of thing. More like, wow, I'm so happy these two people ended up together.
Mm.
I mean, I think certainly some stories did that well, so it's not to say they weren't well written and often resonant in terms of all those issues of self-confidence that many women share and men yeah. too, no doubt. So very emotionally resonant on that side of things, but not necessarily satisfying as the outcome
mm.
of that story. So just something to think about, I suppose.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's stop going on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get to the climax of
oh,
the episode.
Hello.
And that's the podium.
Mm.
So we're going to talk about the third place and second place
mm.
in this episode. We'll read out the second place shortly. But we're not going to read out the winner because
no,
we're going to
head
you a bit longer
mm-hmm.
and we'll be revealing the winner in the final episode along with the overall winner of the Not Quite Right prize for Flesh Fiction. But the person in third place will win a copy of an erotic novel by author Nikki Sex. You can check out Nikki Sex's novels if you search her on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who will be receiving a copy of one of Nikki Sex's novels and the person in third place for the erotic romance category is Under the Weather by Rachel Howden.
Yay, well done, Rachel. Thank you so much. Now, this was a story where the woman was sick and her partner tended to her needs very kindly,
yep.
shall we say. And it was pretty spicy mm-hmm. and certainly probably fit that criteria, Ed, of a story that where the male existed solely for the woman's pleasure.
Yeah, and look, I think that was evident. But I think what elevated this story was the fact that it was quite romantic
mm.
and it was sexy as well. In terms of meeting the brief and meeting the criteria of this category, it did really well.
Mm.
And when we talk about like those considerations and those tropes, I think that it handled them quite well.
Mm.
And so I think, like, again, coming back to some of the difficulties in judging this category and judging it consistently and, you know, giving weight where we need to give weight. Yes, there are obviously romance tropes.
Mm.
And it's hard to argue against them
mm.
in the romance category. Like, we need to some extent embrace those tropes.
Yeah.
As long as there is enough of that other stuff in there
mm.
to keep us interested and engaged and all that kind of thing. And I think it was there in this story.
Yeah, I think certainly from a character development point of view, this story did more to make the couple feel like they were really into each other. It felt very sweet and mm. romantic and there was certainly some emotional resonance there. Like, it felt real. It felt fun and funny as well. It was a good take on the theme. I mean, we can talk all we like about the things that maybe challenged us in judging this category, but ultimately, like, love wins, right?
Mm.
So congratulations, Rachel, and thank you for sharing your story with us.
Mm. All right, so it's time for...
Ooh, are you excited? Are you nervous?
I'm nervous.
Mm-hmm.
It's my first time.
But you famously have a sexy voice. You were reading the dictionary out by
yeah.
request. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think you'll be all right.
All right. Well, I'll give it a go. And so the person in second place wins a bottle of wine
mm-hmm.
and a Lycan knotted werewolf dildo.
Oh, hello.
Which sounds intriguing.
So Lycan is like
I think it's
wolf-like
wolf?
Or something?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, the werewolf
yeah.
is implied, if you will.
That's right. It's more than implied. It's flat out stated.
I have seen this, and it's intimidating.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole knotted thing, I believe that is a thing in circles
thing.
Where that kind of thing is appreciated. So hopefully it is appreciated for whatever purpose by
yeah.
the person who comes second.
Mm.
Hope they come first in all the ways that matter. And without further ado, and without further embarrassment for myself, the person in second place for the erotic romance category for the Not Quite Right prize for Flesh Fiction is Even If It Ruins Us by Alice Black. I find him, the God's damned love of my life, crouched low in a ditch. His rifle is slung loose in one hand, and his eyes are scanning the horizon. The field he's in is empty, except for him. And it's too quiet, because the silence after an airstrike has settled in around him. I call his name, and he turns toward me, slowly, eyes wide and eyebrows raised. For a moment, both of us just stare at each other. Both of us are frozen in the heat, dust and distant screams. Then I close the gap between us, and our bodies crash together. Breaths come in scraping huffs, and he grips the back of my neck. "You're fuck," he says, raw enough to make my chest tighten. "You're actually here." "I am," I say, voice thick in my throat. "The unit's pulled back and left this sector. The Western Ridge is abandoned, although we both know that it won't stay that way for long." He leans back to search my face, hands sliding around my shoulders and gripping tight. "You came back for me. I couldn't leave without you." He doesn't respond. Instead, he presses his palm to my cheek and his forehead to mine, despite the fact that both of us have helmets on. I want nothing in the world but to feel his lips on my own. But I resist, letting myself be satisfied in the moment with sharing breaths. "A way out," he murmurs. "We won't get another," I say against every fibre of my being. "Not if we wait." I force myself to move, though. I take his hand, and together we run to a cratered and blistered ridge. Wind tears through the landscape as I lead him across loose shale until we find a torn tent slumped behind a wall of sandbags. Inside, it's sweltering. The air is thick with canvas, blood, and sweat. A cot is shoved up against the far wall, with twisted sheets, and a lantern sits in a different corner. He crouches and lights it, a golden glow spilling up his body, painting him in soft fire that catches the sheen of sweat on his collarbone, the curve of his throat, the sharp line of his jaw. He straightens out, haloed in that light, and for a second, I forget how to breathe. He looks conjured, myth made flesh, every inch of him familiar, and still enough to undo me. I'm barely breathing when he breaks the silence. "You're shaking," he says. "Yeah," I admit. "I know." He steps closer and takes my hands in his. His skin is warm and it steadies me, sparking something familiar that lives low in my gut. An ache I've carried across every mile to get here. I reach for his vest, undoing the straps and buttons and Velcro, and removing the weight of war from his body. The bottom layer is a shirt that is soaked with sweat and clings to skin. I pull it over his head and drop it to the floor. A dark bruise marks his ribcage, and a scar I don't recognize sits across his collarbone. I circle the scar gently with the tips of my fingers. Does it hurt? I ask. Everything did. Until now, he says, a voice husky, and a thread of my control slips. The corners of my mouth lift, and when he smiles weakly in return, something cracks open between us. You know what they called Achilles? His voice quieter now. A god. Hero. Untouchable. His eyes flick down to our joined hands. And Patroclus, the boy who followed him into war. Maybe, I say, voice catching in my throat. They were just two boys who didn't know how to stop loving each other, even when it ruined them. His lips part for a beat before he speaks. Then we're the same, them and us, he whispers, and at last he kisses me. His mouth is warm and insistent, and the moment it meets mine, something in my chest unclenches. He parts my lips with his tongue, and a soft groan escapes me at the taste of him. He moves towards the cot, taking me with him, and when he lies back, I follow. I straddle him in the small space we have and bend to his throat, tracing the line of his pulse with my tongue. He gasps, fingers digging into my hips. My hands roam across his chest, down to his stomach, learning him all over again. He watches me move, every inch of him responding. We pull my shirt over my head. His palms skate across my back, reverent and sure. I press my mouth to his collarbone, to the scar across it, and then to the spot just below it, where he's always been sensitive. His breath catches, and his nails drag lightly down my ribs. You always do this, he says. You make me feel like I still belong to something. You belong to me, I answer, voice low against his skin. Our words don't slow him. His hands are steady, his grip firm. He knows where I like to be touched, and he does it without hesitation. I reach down, unfastening his pants before I trace along the waistband, teasing, letting tension build. His hips lift into my hand, but I hold him still with a kiss. A fraction of a moment passes before I move lower, kiss the hollow of his stomach, then lower still, down the center of him, until his whole body shivers beneath mine. He tries to be quiet, but I hear the moan he swallows when I unfasten his pants and peel them down off of him. His cock rests against his stomach, flushed and leaking. His breath stutters when I wrap my fingers around him. I kiss the base, then the shaft, then the head. I stroke him slowly, deliberately, feeling the way his muscles jump under my palm. His hips twitch, but I keep my pace, teasing. I kiss the base, then the shaft, then the head, letting my tongue taste the salt of him, the heat. His hand tangles in my hair. when I take him fully into my mouth. It's slow and wet and thorough. I hollow my cheeks and draw him deeper, pausing at the base and pulling back. His thighs tense around me. His breath comes in harsh waves. I hum low in my throat and I feel the shudder ripple through him. He moans loudly, despite the fact that men could be nearby. He says my name again and again and again. I pull off to kiss the tip, tongue circling, and take him again. I move faster now, more deliberate. My hand wraps around what I can't take, working in rhythm with my mouth. His body arches, gasping, hips lifting once, twice. When he finishes, he trembles under me, breath staggered as his body relaxes, softens. The exhaustion catches up now that he's sated. I adjust and lie beside him, kissing his shoulder and throat. His hand finds mine again, lacing our fingers tightly together. He looks at me with something shining in his expression. "My Patroclus," he murmurs. I lean in and press a kiss to his jaw. "My Achilles." We lie, tangled together, skin cooling, mouths brushing over tender places, hands never still. He traces lazy lines across my chest while I memorize the shape of him again. The slope of his spine. The curve of his biceps. The slight tremble still in his thighs. "I didn't follow the order," he says. "I should have pulled back, but I stayed." "I figured," I say. "I couldn't leave if there was any chance you were still out here." "I came back," I tell him. "I always will." He turns his face into my shoulder. "They'll retake this ridge by morning." "I know they will." "Then why are we staying?" I brush a strand of golden hair from his forehead and let my hand settle at his cheek. "I wanted it to be with you, near this place where we found each other again." He nods and presses his forehead to mine. The tent creaks with wind. Dust shifts on the ground outside. The world waits to swallow us again. But we have carved out this breath between battles, and we stay inside it just a little longer. The ridge won't hold. The war will go on. Other men will die. But at this moment, none of that matters. Only our bodies, alive and nestled together, do. So thank you, Alice Black, for your story, and congratulations on getting second place.
Yeah.
It was a very evocative story and reminiscent of one actually that we had on a recent Daredevil episode.
Yeah, wasn't that interesting? I think when we read this one, and especially as we were getting to the end of the judging process, which was after we recorded
I'd
that
I actually
Daredevil.
Read this for the first time just after I'd finished editing that episode.
Oh, wow.
So it was quite funny
to
then encounter this one. But yeah, the second mention of Achilles and Patroclus, and I think probably this story was even more resonant for me because we had had that recent experience.
Yeah, and but also excellent, excellent storytelling. Mm. I definitely felt the romance factor in this story. It was very emotionally resonant. These characters leapt off the page for me. And I think it's interesting too because obviously we're straight people mm-hmm. judging this competition, but for me there's just no difference in how I judge the spice
yeah.
factor. Yeah. I didn't feel that there was anyway. And I mean, I've just, since we last recorded, I've started watching Heated Rivalry mm-hmm. and I'm like, mm-hmm. I am on board. So, I mean, I was already a little bit on board, we might say, with the Ian Thorpe factor and whatnot. But anyway, but like, it's interesting, I think, that you can read a story about other people and it doesn't matter. I mean, you read a story about a straight couple and you don't have to be like the person mm. in that relationship to understand that they are into each other.
Yeah.
So I guess that was a surprising thing for me a little bit, how little that yeah. seemed to matter. This was very spicy. It did not shy away from quite graphic description of the action, which I appreciated. I know early on when we first started reading the stories, we were feeling like, oh, there's a lot of stories that are kind of pulling their punches a little bit. This one didn't do that, and I think that was one of its strengths.
And also the theme there, the idea of making the unsexy irresistible, like the idea of war, obviously very unsexy. And in this situation, they're up against it, like, so to speak. In a military setting.
Okay.
As well as like an emotional setting. So I think those two things work well together. And obviously, you know, war is unsexy, but there have been plenty of, you know, movie scenes and book scenes that are kind of amplified by that.
Mm, the risk, the kind of life or death.
Yeah, the risk and yeah. the tension and the danger and all that kind of thing. So perfect response. So well done, Alice. And you'll be receiving a bottle of wine and a Lycan knotted werewolf dildo. So those two items work together, I believe.
Oh, hello.
I think that's the point here. So enjoy.
And thank you very much to our generous sponsors for providing those. So that's the dildo is from Odyssey Toys mm-hmm. and the wine from Naked Wines Australia. So thank you.
So thank you and enjoy. But we're not going to read the winning story. No. We'll have to wait a little bit longer for that one. That's coming in the final episode, the climactic episode. I can't wait for that. But before that, we've still got another four categories to talk about.
And so many more great stories to read too.
Absolutely. So we'll be back very soon with our next one. And until then, ride on.
Ride on.
Thank you for listening to Not Quite Right. If you'd like to reach us via email or follow us on social media, you can find all the links on our website, notquiterightpodcast.com. That's WRITE. And if you enjoyed the show, we'd love it if you could leave us a 5-star review on your favourite podcasting app.
Something doesn't seem quite right.
Are you okay? Do you need the hose?
Do you need those?
A little.